October 11, 2016 public meeting for the purpose of discussing the Township of Derry multi-year financial planning to be presented by the Public Finance Management Group. At this time, I would like to ask those in attendance to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Chair, may I please have the roll call?
Member Matt Weir?
Here.
Member Justin Engel?
Here.
Member Susan Court?
I believe she will be here, but may be running a little late this evening.
Member John Foley?
Here.
Chairman Mark Moyer?
Here. As I indicated, the purpose for this meeting is to discuss the Township of Derry's multi-year financial planning presented by the Public Finance Management Group, with whom we had addressed this issue some time ago. And I believe the PFM group is prepared to discuss some aspects of its findings. And Gordon, please proceed.
Thank you very much. Well, thanks for the opportunity to speak with you tonight. I have a fairly loud voice, so I'm not sure how much I'll need the microphone. I realize that Tuesday night, hour and a half meetings or conversations about finance may not be the most scintillating stuff, so I'll try and be fairly energetic and keep this lively. We were hired back in June to help the township with its multi-year financial planning process. Our company, PFM, does this type of work throughout the country. We're based here in Pennsylvania. Our home office is in Philadelphia. I think our second largest office is not too far from here in Harrisburg. And we've worked with the township on a number of things over the years. Our financial advisory folks work closely with Lou Verdelli on some issues, and our group helped the township look at a tax issue over a decade ago now. But why we're brought here tonight is to help the township with multi-year financial planning. A different kind of process with a specific focus tonight. Something that we've done all over the Commonwealth and lots of different kinds of governments. So about 3 years ago, we did this process in Cumberland County. Cumberland County not far from here, or county government, so certainly different types of services, but strongly rated credit, growing. Looks demographically certainly like parts of Cumberland County look like Derry Township, so there's some similarities there. We've done this work with some smaller cities throughout the state. So we have done it with Philadelphia and Pittsburgh and the largest cities in the Commonwealth and around the country. But we've also done it with some cities that are roughly the size of the township here. And we've also done things of this nature, although not this process specifically, with the Derry Township School District. So familiarity, over a decade of experience doing this type of thing, which may be new for the township, some of the concepts we talk about. So before I jump right into what we see as the multi-year planning, you know, kind of recommendations, allow me just a couple of minutes to do some general introductions on what this process means. So all of you are no doubt familiar with at least one financial budget or document. You're familiar with the budget. It'll be released in about 30 to 45 days, somewhere in there. You're probably familiar with the audit, which is a retrospective look at how the township's doing financially. We bring in an independent accounting firm and they take a look at your books. From a forward-looking perspective, you have three main tools in government. The first is cash flow projection. That's something that Jim and his staff would manage on an internal basis, and the concept there is very simple. Do I have enough money on hand to pay my bills when they come due, to pay payroll, to pay health insurance, whatever it is that's due? The annual budget extends that horizon out a little bit. It says, do I have enough money over a full calendar year so that revenues balance with expenses? What the multi-year plan does is takes that horizon and stretches it out even more. 3 to 5 years is generally how far out you look for an operating budget, for a capital budget. We'll talk about a 10-year projection tonight. But think of it in the same time of terms that you think of the annual budget. So I need the money I bring in to balance what I'm going to spend, with the difference that in your budget, when you pass it in the beginning of the year, it's sort of set. And there are limited things that you can do throughout the year to change it. There are some, but there's a lot more flexibility here with the multi-year plan. You'll look at this one, you would make a decision once, and then recognizing the fact that circumstances change, that revenues and expenditures will change, you would make adjustments as time goes on. So there's three main goals that we try and get at through the multi-year planning process. The first is what we call structural position. Do your recurring revenues cover your recurring expenses? And that recurring word is very important. If you have a deficit, there may be things you're able to do on a one-time basis. You could sell property. You could do some things with your debt. You could postpone payments. There are things you could do to get you through the year if you have a one-time deficit. If you have a recurring deficit, then you need a recurring solution. Think of it as fitting the patch to the hole. You don't take a little hole, a little patch for a large hole. So that's the first issue when we look at multi-year planning. The second one is sensitivity analysis. The world is not static. The numbers I'm going to present to you tonight will be under a certain set of assumptions, and we'll explain what they are, and we can talk about why we chose this set of assumptions. But I don't have a crystal ball. So what I present tonight, circumstances will change, and the sensitivity analysis is designed to say, okay, here's where I am today, but what if our economy grows? What if it doesn't grow? What if we have a recession? What if the state changes certain types of policies? What if Hershey expands or contracts? And so to give you a tool so that you can think, as these different types of variables change, how does your financial position change? And the last thing, which is most important of all, is to connect finance to what government does. So my standard spiel in these types of meetings is the name of our company isn't very creative, but it is descriptive. With that, public finance is what we do. With that said, we understand that at the heart of government does not exist to make money. It's not a bank. The goal is not to push the fund balance to your reserve levels as high as we can get them to go. It's not a profit-driven institution. That said, if government doesn't have money, it can't do the things that it does exist to do. So at the end of the community, at the end of the planning process, we should be able to take your numbers and tie them back to community goals. The last thing I would say, and I'm not just saying this because Lou is here, but one of the values you get out of this multi-year planning process is you can attach a dollar value to this, because where you'll use it, especially, is if you borrow money to do certain kinds of projects. So when you go out, just like if you were trying to borrow money to buy a house or to buy a car, they'll check your credit rating, and the credit rating here is partially determined by credit rating agencies, limited series of them, and they will look at your books, look at your budget, and determine how credit worthy they think you are, which is basically a determination of how risky they think you are. What is the likelihood that you're going to be able to pay back what you owe and when you owe it? And the lower risk you are, the higher your credit rating, and the lower your borrowing costs. And those credit agencies like multi-year plans. We did a multi-year plan with a government not far from here, because I won't name, because it's not a particularly flattering story, where they went through the credit rating process and they had a long list of things that were wrong with it. Deficits, high poverty rate, low educational attainment, kind of the list of urban decay. And on the positive side, they had one thing, has a multi-year plan. Now, I'm not flattering myself enough to think that the rating agencies even looked at the multi-year plan, but the fact that it existed made them feel better and allowed them to keep a non-junk bond status for about a year before the bottom fell out. So this does have a financial bottom line impact if done, for starters, but then if used. Some places do multi-year planning because they have to. So you have a neighbor not far from here, Harrisburg, who goes through something similar to this, a little different focus, every year because they have to. You're obviously not Harrisburg, thankfully. Other places do this because they want to. Lower Merion, which is a very, very wealthy suburb just outside of Philadelphia, if you're a basketball fan, that's where the Sixers own their houses. It's where Kobe Bryant grew up. Extremely wealthy. They go through this process every year. Obviously, totally different challenges and totally different issues than the city of Harrisburg. But both ends of the spectrum can go through this process. And our process with you guys is kind of an extension of the comprehensive plan that you went through last year. So plans galore. So let me just separate them. Comprehensive plan is a planning urban design document where you talk about how does the community grow and what do you want it to look like, and it's generally done by architects and engineers. Financial plans are done by folks like me. Sometimes accounting firms get into the mix, and they're very focused on the numbers. They basically will take, as an element, they'll take that comprehensive plan and say, this is what we want to do. Now how do we make sure we can pay for it? So that's what we'll walk through a little bit here tonight. One thing that we'll come to at the end and spend as much time on as you either have the will to or the time to is this: what we presented was not, what we've created is not just this. It's not I spent X thousand dollars and all I got was a fancy PowerPoint. We have created a budget model, a projection model, which we will give to Jim and his staff and train them how to use so that you can play with the assumptions. So this is a poll right from the model, and what it enables you to do, and we'll walk through the math of this, is to say, these are the different assumed growth rates for how I think my revenues will grow, how I think my expenses will grow. I'll start at a certain point. I'll start with a baseline, which we'll walk through in some detail. But I want to do some what-if analysis. What if I get additional real estate tax? What if I want to play with different sorts of combinations of salary increases? What if I want to do something different, or try and do something, model different sorts of circumstances at Hershey Park? Do they grow? Do they contract? Does their attendance go up or down? We'll train your staff here so that they're able to do that sort of what-if analysis to guide you and whoever else is involved in the capital planning process, but then to the operating budget. That doesn't present quite as compactly because everything's dynamic there. You change one number and it rolls through into several others, but that is part of the process and part of the service that we deliver. All right, so let's talk specifically about the capital plan, and I'll try and strike the right balance here, because obviously the board is familiar with most of this, maybe some of the staff, some of the folks in the audience a little less familiar. But you have a number of funds in your budget. Government does what's called fund accounting, where they break out everything that government does and they put it in different silos. And one of those silos is the operating budget, or the general fund budget, and that pays for most of your police, your firefighters, a significant part of your public works. The folks who work on tax collection, it's operations, it's day-to-day operations. Not quite all of it, but a large percentage of it. And that's about $17 million here. You have a separate fund for capital projects. So capital projects are projects where you're acquiring, building, or improving facilities or infrastructure. These are things that you don't do every day, but you need to do your day-to-day operations. So building this building would be one of them. You don't build one of these every month, every year, every 5 years, but you do build it to assist in day-to-day operations. Buying police cars, buying fire trucks, investing in fire stations, paving roads, the recreation center, streetscape improvements. These are the types of things that you would fund through your capital project. The other thing that you fund through your capital project is debt from past capital projects. And that's not uncommon, that's perfectly acceptable. You can see the mix there. The dark blue are the things that you've done where you buy something this year. I bought a police car. I bought mobile data terminals for the police cars. I bought public works equipment. I bought whatever it is I bought. I bought services related to that. So I didn't just build a bridge. I paid the engineers to design it. That's what you have there in the blue. And you have, you know, out of this fund, you spend about $1 to $4 million a year. The other part of that, the gray, is the debt. And that's a combination of things. So you didn't go crazy with your debt in 2008, 10, 11, and 12 and go on a spending spree. This is your normal range of debt. We'll show you what it looks like going out. But what happens when you refinance debt, just like when you refinance your mortgage, you go to the bank, you get a new loan, they say, here it is to pay off your old one. You take a big influx of money in, and then you spend a lot of money out. So it trades in and out. You'll see a slide in a couple of pages in a few minutes here, which shows those big spikes in 8, 10, 11, and 12 are matched by big inflows of revenue. So don't be alarmed by that. Just know that this is, roughly speaking, this is the way your financial activity has worked. And over the last couple of years, if we can flip to the next slide, your capital spending has gone down. So your capital project budget this year, you have $1 million for projects and about $1.9 million for debt. So $3 million total. That's the smallest amount in the 10-year period that we reviewed spent actually doing things, buying things, fixing things, studying how to fix things, and that's the smallest overall. And again, you can see that the majority of it goes through paying off your debt. You've got buildings, the majority of which goes to the library. Oh, I thought there was somebody here from the library. There is it. Okay. You've got a series of vehicles for the Public Works Department, and then you've got special projects, which for the most part here is about a $300,000 project you're doing with the Cocoa Castle, which is partially reimbursed by state grant. The one thing that is not in your capital budget is the thing that probably most residents ask you about. It's roads. It's paving. You pay for roads out of what's called your liquid fuels fund, like a lot of other governments in Pennsylvania do. You get a portion of the liquid fuels tax, the tax that we all pay when we put gas in our car, and then you take that, you have the ability to use that to either to maintain or do roads-related activities. So that's plowing, that's salting, that's also paving. You don't do a lot of paving out of your capital fund, and that's fine. But we didn't forget about that. It's not in this particular site. So there's two ways you can pay for capital projects: pay-go and debt finance. I can pay with the money I have today, or I can pay with the borrowed money with the money I hope to have down the line. You use them ideally for two different kinds of things. So on the left side, pay-go projects tend to be smaller. They tend to be things that don't last very long. So the mobile data terminals, which are the kind of laptop-style computers that go in a police car or a fire car or a code enforcement unit, those things cost X thousand dollars. It's not generally six digits or five digits. It's generally four. They last 3 to 4 years, depending on how you beat them up and what type of technology upgrades there are. You're not going to do 30 years worth of borrowing to pay off something that lasts 4 years. That wouldn't make sense. At the same time, a building like this is something you will build and use over a long period of time. Unless you're fabulously wealthy, you don't have $30 million sitting around to walk over to the general contractor and say, please build me a new building. So you borrow that money. The pros and cons of each: pay-as-you-go is simpler. It's money that you have. You don't have to pay folks like Lou or PFM money to go through the borrowing process. There's no issuance costs. They're also generally for smaller projects. Something that finance guys like me get kind of stirred up about: intergenerational equity. Do the people who pay for the thing use the thing? If you had $50 million and you walked over to somebody and said, build this building, the people who pay taxes now would effectively be paying for all the benefits that future people receive. So there's a philosophical reason to issue debt in addition to the practical reason that you likely need to. And you can sort of see the cons. This isn't a good or bad or right or wrong. The right capital plan will have a mix of these things. And you basically do. So the yellow again, this is the money flowing in or out from debt refinancing, which you would generally do to save money or to structure your debt payments differently over a period of time. So while it's very eye-grabbing, probably the yellow section with the dotted lines is probably the least important of what you have here. This is how you pay for your debt. So you essentially have three things that you use to pay for projects. So keep this in the back of your mind as we think about kind of next level capital projects, because that's where we're headed overall. The thrust of this process is to say, okay, we want to do streetscape improvements, or we want to do something different with the recreation center, or we want to do something different with a fire station, or I know I'm going to need a fire truck. What are the three tools that I have to pay for those things? And these are the three. You've got money that you transfer into the capital fund from the general fund. So that's called the interfund transfer. What that really boils down to is the tax money that you collect, mostly to pay operations. There's a portion of that that goes into the capital fund. And it's about $900,000 to $1 million a year. That's pay-go money. That's the income tax, that's the occupation tax, that's whatever fees you collect, but it's mostly taxes. And most of your tax revenue comes from earned income, real estate, and occupation. So that's the first source of money that you have. Anytime you have a hole in the general fund, and I'll come back to this to the point where you're tired of hearing it, any hole you have in the capital fund, anytime the capital fund falls short, you can't have a deficit there. Because a deficit there means you're not paying your debt. And then you are Harrisburg, or moving closer to it. So anytime you have a deficit in the capital fund, the general fund will fill that. So that's the first stream of revenue. You have some intergovernmental revenues on occasion. So these are grants. A handful of years ago, Dauphin County was giving money to the township for fire equipment. Right now, I mentioned the Cocoa Castle project. That's partially funded by, I think, the state DCNR. So you have this intergovernmental money. You generally can't fund a capital. You can't fund a full capital budget on it. It's not enough. It's not recurring enough. It's not predictable enough. But you do have that money. The one extra piece you have is you have a transfer into your capital fund from your recycling fund. So some of your debt is related to recycling and trash-related activities. So you have an amount of money that flows from the recycling fund, as opposed to the general fund, into the capital fund. And the third thing you have is debt when you issue it. I'm sorry, there's one other one, is the real estate tax. So you have a portion of your real estate tax. Most of your real estate tax goes towards operations. So it goes towards paying for the things that government does on a day-to-day basis. But a portion of it goes to the capital fund. And what it's specifically for is debt. That portion of the tax is designed, it's sometimes called a debt service tax or a sinking fund tax or whatever. It's designed to take care of your debt. So ideally, the money I bring in to pay for debt should at least be enough to pay for debt. It should be equal. Here's what you have projected out. So last year, a couple years back, we'll go rather, you've got about $2 million in debt service, that's this blue line, and your real estate tax revenue is about $900,000 in this particular fund. Larger across both funds, but in this fund alone, it's a little under $1 million. Next year, looks like we made a copy and paste there, but no, it's pretty much the same, and then the same, and then the same. We'll talk about why this is, but this is a very stable source of revenue. The good thing is it's stable. It doesn't go up and down as the economy does. The bad thing is it's stable. It doesn't go up. It is largely flat lined unless you make some sort of adjustment to the tax rate. So this is the money, the gray bar, that you have coming in to pay for debt. And this is your debt. $2 million, a little over two, then it drops down, and then you have a very standard debt profile where it kind of plateaus and then gradually comes down. So 7-8 years from now, your debt would be closer to 1.75, then it's 1.5, and then it drops below one, and if we extend this out to time immemorial, it eventually goes away entirely. The problem here is, remember what we said, the portion of this tax is to pay for your debt. And it's not doing it. Not in any year. Until 9 years from now. So what does that mean? You have to pay your debt. You can't go to your bondholders and your banks and so, sorry about that. So the general fund is subsidizing that. Any shortfall in the capital fund is subsidized by the general fund. So all that difference there, that call it $1 million, is coming out basically out of your general fund. So let's pull all the pieces together here for the capital project. This is what we call the baseline projection. So this is not a prediction of where you will go in the next 10 years. Think of this as if I take my hands off the steering wheel and I do nothing different. If we all walk out of here and agree never to come back, this is what would happen. This is status quo. We don't put this up here because we think this is where you will end up, and certainly not because it's where we think you should end up. But doing this allows us to say, okay, where are we headed? Think of it as taking your hands off the wheel of the car, and if the car goes to the right or the left, where do I have to make the adjustment to get it back on course? And how big an adjustment do I need? So here's our four revenue sources. Real estate tax revenue flat is about $1 million a year. The recycling fund transfer this year is $500,000. Next year it will come down to 250, and it's just rounded up to 300. The general fund transfer, again, remember, you're not allowed to have a deficit out here as you get farther out. You have to pay your debt. So the general fund transfer, which is about $1 million now, if you do nothing else, will go up to close to $1.5 million, and then as your debt starts to decline, we'll come back down with it. And the other small things that aren't really worth talking about. This is the debt service. This is that blue line on that last graph. You see it's about $2 million, then it gradually starts to come down to about $500,000. These are the building improvements. So we talked about the things that the township is doing this year with the library. This would be the continuation of that sort of thing. You have vehicles that you have to use every day. You have police cars, you have public works vehicles. On an annual basis, including your leases and the things that you use to pay off cars over a period of time, you've got about $300,000. Eventually that goes away. Car leases don't last forever. But cars break down too. So this is one of the kind of false assumptions in this scenario, is to say, well, if I never do anything again, eventually I will have to stop paying for cars. Yes, you would also stop having cars. And then the special projects, there's that one-time thing. You're not going to do a $300,000 project at the Cocoa Castle every year. So what you have in your budget this year is you actually have a deficit in the budget itself. Even with the $1 million transfer, there's a difference of about $300,000 where you're expecting to spend $300,000 more than you bring in. And that's actually been the case in the capital fund for a couple of years. Is that a bad thing? Not necessarily, as long as this number is something bigger than zero. So you have reserves in this fund. You have money that's been built up over time. Hopefully not too much of it is tied to debt, because then there's special issues around that. But you do have something in the bank. The savings account doesn't read zero. So what you've basically been doing is spending that down. And what we show is if, again, making no other corrections, I'm going to spend $300,000 this year, and then $600,000 next year, and then $500,000 the year after that. And now I get to this point, and now I need to do something else. So in 2019, my hole is bigger than what I've got in the bank to fill. And so you see the general fund starts to backfill that so that this is always zero. Again, is this necessarily a problem, spending down your reserves in the capital fund? Not necessarily. I don't know that there's a great philosophical reason to have reserves that are specifically here, because this is not something that you could say, well, I think I'm going to take that money and use it to pay cops this year. This is something that's specifically tied to these items up here. But just like you can't use your savings indefinitely to pay for your expenses, when they're gone, they're gone. And right now we show them being gone at this pace at about the rate of 2019. So what would make that happen faster? Well, if a building breaks, if something blows up that's not supposed to, if you have a lot of road projects and you start to draw this down faster, then you could expend your reserves faster. What could make it not take as long? Candidly, not a whole lot in your situation, because the only revenue that you've got flowing in here is the real estate tax, and that doesn't move up and down very much. I guess if you decided not to do building improvements, if you said, we're not going to do anything at these particular buildings anymore, and I want to be clear about this, that's not at all what we're recommending here. What you're doing here, the kind of baseline that you have, you need that to run government. Some governments would just take this and put it in their general fund, and it would have the same practical impact. So if there's not a problem necessarily with what you're doing there. That's part of the cost of business, but it's part of the cost of having a government. So we talked about the deficit. So now we're going to spend some more time on the general fund. And the natural question here may be why. This is supposed to be about the capital fund. This is supposed to be about capital projects. And you got some sense of that from me saying continually, the general fund backfills the capital fund. The general fund backfills the capital fund. The reason why is, remember the two ways that we have to pay for capital projects. We've got debt, we've got pay-as-you-go. And your ability to do either one is determined by what your general fund has. So if I'm going to go the blue route, if I'm going to go the pay-go route, then I need to know how much money I've got to pay for things as I go. I need to know what the general fund is. Is it strong enough to increase things so that the contribution from the general fund can be even larger? Not just to cover debt, but now to cover debt and to do something at the rec center, or to cover debt and to do something for the fire department. And the question is the general fund strong enough to do that? If I'm going to pay for larger projects over a period of time and I'm going to issue debt, the question is the general fund strong enough to pay for that? Now I don't need necessarily $5 million up front, but I need enough money coming out of the general fund on a yearly basis so that whatever that payment is over a period of time, I know the general fund is strong enough to carry it. Think of this as putting a large rock on top of the general fund's shoulders either in 1 year or lots of little rocks over a period of time. But we need to know that the general fund, man, is strong enough to carry the rocks over a period of time. So that's why we spend so much time on this part of the exercise. Already talked about most of this, but the same caveats that went before. You're going to see these numbers, maybe you've already seen the numbers from reading the report before. But if you haven't, if you didn't have a chance to look at the report before, probably part of what I'm going to say here is going to be somewhat surprising. Please understand this is not a prescription for where your general fund should go. This is not a prediction of where your general fund should go. This is us trying to size any hole on the tire to know how big or what type of patch we need. So let's talk in the same thing. Where does your money come from and where does your money go? Well, 66% of your money comes from six taxes, and we're going to walk through those in somewhat rapid pace so we don't bore everybody to tears. But your largest revenue is your earned income tax. It's about $5 billion a year. You can see what it's been in the past. Right here, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania passed a law statewide that changed how the tax is collected. So you get money faster. It's collected on a countywide basis. It's no longer collected over there. It's collected countywide now. And everybody got that kind of bump that you see in 2012. Some places continue to get it in other years. Here in Dauphin County, in this respect, you are like some of your neighbors. You got that bump in 12, and then it came back down. So it's not all the way back down to where it was pre-12, but it's also it didn't go up to 12 and then kind of cascade off of that. Not quite yet. So your growth rate there before the change in the tax law is about 3.5%. Your growth rate there after the change in the tax law is pretty flat. It's about 0.6%. So what we projected here are pulling the pieces all together, which you'll see in a bit, is we're projecting that your income tax grows by 2.5% per year. Now, Probably the tax you hear the most about, but actually your third largest tax here in Derry Township is the real estate tax. This is just the portion that goes to operations, so this isn't that portion that's supposed to pay for debt. It's about $2 million per year, and you can see it's remarkably level. Remember we said the good news is it doesn't go up and down, the bad news is it doesn't go up or down. Unless you change the tax rate, which is what happened here. So this was the tax rate increase, which brought it up, and then you can see it again remains sort of level throughout. So we have a projected growth rate here of about 1%. That's what your assessed taxable value is doing here. So the non-taxable value of the hospital is, I think the hospital is tax exempt, right?
Yeah.
So take them out of the mix because they don't pay this tax. But the value of the property that is taxable grows by about 1% per year here. Two taxes that are tied to employment other than the income tax, the occupation tax and the local service tax. The occupation tax is paid by residents, $500 per job, and then it's split between the township and the school district. The local that's the blue line, and you can see that actually hasn't been doing real well. Since the rate changed, it's been actually shrinking at about 3% per year. The local service tax is everybody who works in the township. So that's people who live outside of Derry and then drive in and work here. Hershey Park, the hospital, wherever. That's $52 a year. You get 47 of it. Five of it goes again to the school district. That one's growing a little bit better. This is the tax, incidentally, that when we did our work in 2005, this is the one we worked with. That's growing at about 1% per year. So we're going to assume employment in the township, whether it's people who live here or people who drive in here, is going to grow by about 1% per year. You have a special array of taxes here because of because of Hershey Park and the difference that makes in your finances. So the blue line is the amusement tax. That's a now 42-cent charge per ticket. The parking lot tax is exactly what it sounds like. It's 10% of parking rates. And this goes up and down as Hershey Park's attendance does. So if you have a good year and you have, the sky is beautiful and people are coming to Hershey Park because there's new rides or whatever it is, these revenues go up. If the weather is stinky and nobody wants to come to Hershey Park or fewer people want to come to Hershey Park, then your revenues drop. Overall, we're projecting that they grow at about a 2% clip. So those are your revenues. Your largest revenues, income tax 2.5%, real estate tax 1%, these other sort of employment or entertainment-based taxes 1-2%. You do have other things that you do besides taxes. If you take them all and you roll them all up, it's about $5 million. We generally have kind of a generic growth rate assumption here. We have done step-by-step analysis here if anybody has any interest in getting into the guts of these, but these things are generally pretty stable. All right, so that's where we get our money from. What do we spend it on? Well, like just about every other local government, at least everyone I've seen, you spend it on your people. And that's okay. That's what local government is. Local government is police officers and firefighters, volunteer firefighters here, but the folks at City Hall. This is not the federal government. You're not in the business of building aircraft carriers or nuclear missiles. So you spend your money on your people. And the largest portion of that goes towards the wages they make. So if we look at this over a period of time, we've broken it out into the three kind of general employee groups. You've got the police officers, you've got the folks that are in the bargaining unit for AFSCME, so that's your public works folks, and you've got kind of everybody else, which we put into exempt. This is not the base wage increase that each one of these employees has received every year. You didn't do a contract over the last 10 years that gives cops a 4% increase while AFSCME just got a 1.5% and exempt a 4.6%. That's the wrong conclusion to draw from this. But if we take into account the fact that the number of positions have changed and that you've had position vacancies, and when a position stays vacant, you don't spend money on it. And if you have a police officer at this end of the schedule, retires and is replaced by someone at this end of the schedule, your costs drop. So if we take all those different factors and we roll it out, that's what it looks like in that chart there. You are spending generally more, and I mean, it's the biggest bar and it's growing the fastest, on your police officers. Not unusual. And then AFSCME grows at a little lower rate, and then the kind of everybody else is what you have in the green. What we are showing here in our projection is assuming a 3% base wage increase per year over the projection period. That may not be affordable. That may not even be what you do when you walk into negotiations with these unions. The unions, incidentally, do have a 3% wage increase next year and the year after that by contract. But once you get out to 2019 and you're negotiating, we're not saying this is going to be or this should be your position, but this is the assumption we're using stretching forward. Second largest thing you spend money on is your employees' health insurance. And this is an important one because it can grow really, really quickly. So you're spending, and again, this isn't health insurance per person, this is health insurance overall. So changes in the types of plans and the number of employees you had covered here would all roll up here. You have a third-party administrator who's way more expert at these things than I am. And what they do when they work with you on an annual basis is they say, we think your expenses are going to grow by X percent. And X percent for you is usually 8 to 10%. Looking at it this year, your claims have been a little higher, so when we talked to them for this exercise, they said basically, err on the side of being higher than that range. Now, your health insurance, the way it works is you're self-insured. So if you have a really good year, meaning your employees are healthy, nobody needs heart surgery, people need fewer medications, your costs come down directly. All of that savings comes to you, not Aetna or Blue Cross or whatever other health insurance carrier you have, or you might have. The bad news is when you have a bad year, you eat it. All the risk is yours too. And in recent years, you've had pretty large growth. Maybe that's a fluke, maybe that's a sign of larger trends, I don't know, but that's a risk that you have. It's a risk that the township has made a decision to make, and it's not necessarily the wrong one. There may be years where that's paid off. But what that means is there could be a fair amount of volatility here in this particular part of your budget. Pensions. Stable for you guys. Whether it's too high or too low, I'll leave that to other people to determine, but it is stable, and that's nice. So you can see you pay pension contribution to the cops, you pay the pension contribution for everybody else. You also have a third contribution to the volunteer firefighters, which is just taking money from the state and handing it off. It's a one-to-one handoff. There's no net impact on you. Again, you have an outside expert who does this sort of thing. You have actuaries, two sets, one for each pension plan. What we said is, hey, we know you don't have a crystal ball either. You can't tell me what the stock market's going to do over the next 10 years. But under the set of assumptions you normally make, give me the amount the township will have to pay for pensions. And that's what you have there, that line it carries out. The police pension payment stays relatively level. The civilian pension payment actually goes up a little bit in a couple of years because of a change in something that's even drier than this called actuarial assumptions. How long do people live? Do they get married? When do they die? That sort of thing. And changes in those assumptions will change the amount that you need to contribute. And you've got a set of changes coming for next year. So that's why you see that red or pink bar kind of grow 17. Okay, not everything is people, although the majority of it is. You do have vehicles. And for a lot of these items, we didn't spend a lot of time saying, gosh, what is the township going to spend on paper in the year 2023? A fair number of these, we grew them by some sort of inflationary measure. This is one that goes up and down. This is your maintenance and your equipment on vehicles. This is your gas and fuel vehicles. And the reason we drew this one out is this one does tie to your capital plan. So if you go out and buy lots and lots and lots of cars or lots and lots and lots of vehicles that are expensive to maintain or that create the need to replace them, then that capital fund will bear the burden of that. If you do the opposite, if you say, we're never going to spend anything on fixing up our cars, we're going to run them into the ground all the time, then you will see these expenses go up because it will become more and more costly to actually drive those cars, get them to pass emission standards. So there's a balancing act here between replace and repair. This is your general fund, and this is pulling it all together. And if there's one slide on here, I don't know if it will surprise you, but if it does, this would be the one that would surprise you. So there are our revenues. We talked through the top six. There's some other things in there that, because the presentation's already arguably too long, we didn't get into. But you have about $17.5 million in your budget this year, and then it grows. Again, remember what our top things grow at. Real estate tax, 1%. Income tax, 2.5%. The other thing is somewhere between 1 and 3%. So that grows from $17.5 million to 20.2. Now let's think about the things we spend money on. Salaries, projection, 3%. Health insurance, projection, 10%. Pensions, relatively even. Some of those other things, inflation. What happens is you've got a balanced budget this year, a balanced budget at $17.5 million. But if you don't do anything differently, because the money that's coming in is growing slower than the money that's going out, you get a deficit. The other thing that drives this deficit is this, and that's why this line is highlighted. Remember what we said about your capital fund. Any shortfall in your capital fund has to be paid by the general fund. So this burden, those rocks, that drawdown on the general fund, it gets bigger out here. And so does your overall deficit. This does not mean, the wrong thing to take away from this is, oh my gosh, we're going to have a $2 million deficit in a couple of years. Remember, this is if you do nothing else. You're not going to do nothing else. Statutorily, you're not allowed to. In terms of your personality, you've been balancing your budget and managing your finances. So this is not going to happen. But what you should know is the money that goes out of your general fund goes out at a faster rate than the money that comes into it. That makes you no different from almost any other government in Pennsylvania. But it's something to keep in mind, because what it means is, and this is partly what I've done, two things to know about this. One, it's what you've been doing already. So you actually have had deficits the last few years. This is your reserves. Remember that bank account that we talked about in the capital reserves? This one you don't want to run down. I'm sorry, this is not your reserve. This is your annual results. So in 2012, you had a $1.2 million win. The money you brought in was $1.2 million more than the money you spent. 2013, you won, but not by as much. It went from $1.2 to $0.4 million. 2014, more or less balanced. Slightly negative when you do the rounding, you can't even see it. Last year, you had a $500,000 deficit. Your trend's going the wrong direction. You're going from good result, okay result, mediocre result, not good result. And the number that doesn't fit this trend is this one. Because if I draw that line, it doesn't finish here. It finishes around here. So is that where you're headed for 2016? I don't know. But when we talk through some of your revenues and expenses, we learned that some of the revenues that are in there for the earned income tax, some of the revenues that are in there for the local services tax, you're likely to fall short on some of those targets. We also learned that some of your spending is likely to be a little higher. Again, I can't say, your finance folks would be in a better position to say whether you're going to finish on balance or not, but given your trend, it's not just going to happen by accident. So that's the first thing to know, is those projections where I said that's not what's going to happen, that's not what's going to happen, but you do have a trend going the wrong direction in your general fund. The good news is it's fixable. You are not in a place that doesn't have any options to fix this. There are things you can do with health insurance. There are things that you can do with our assumptions. Remember what I said very early on in the process, where I said you may want to play with different assumptions about wage increases and say, well, instead of doing 3-3-3-3-3-3-3-3-3-3 every year for every employee, I'm going to mix in some twos or some ones or some whatever, and start to bring the revenue and expenses line back into alignment. You're going to have a chance to work on these things in the budget process. And this is sort of like I went to a capital planning process and a budget conversation broke out. But you're going to have, the budget conversation is going to be your chance to say, where are we likely to finish this year for real? Where are we likely to finish with our reserves for real this year? Because you have been spending them down. And then what does that mean? How do we break the losing streak? How do next year we make sure that if this year is on course to finish with a deficit, that we make sure we get that back on balance? To bring this all the way back to the capital projects, what it means is the general fund man is not strong enough to carry more for the capital fund. It's not strong enough to make a bigger contribution to the capital fund on a pay-as-you-go basis. And it's probably not in a position where you want to be, well, you certainly don't want to issue debt just to pay for operations anyway, so that's never really a prospect. But if you want to do things in the capital fund, it's going to mean, let's jump all the way to the question that a lot of people have, it likely means newer taxes, and it definitely means debt. You don't have big enough reserves in your capital fund, and you're depleting them in your general fund. So if you want to do big next level things, you need the money to do it, and it's not hiding here somewhere in the township hall. You will have to borrow money to do that. Again, this is kind of the grand summary here of what we've been talking about. The capital project fund has had a deficit. The one source of revenue it has that isn't taking money from other pots is the real estate tax. And that tax is designed to do one thing, and it's not doing it. You are not bringing in enough money to pay your debt with your debt service tax. You only have three revenue sources in the capital fund, and one of them is drawing from the general fund. So that just exacerbates the hole over there. And the recycling fund transfer, I don't know that that's something you have a lot of flexibility to fix. Jim asked us to sort of finish with, I think, do we have one more? Okay. So we have one more slide. Okay, what are the, we can talk about, and we, and after this we can look at the model. So the model will say, okay, it gives you the ability to say, okay, let's assume we fix the general fund problem because we need to do that. Let's come back to the capital for the project because we want to do other things too. That's what this process was about. What are the types of, how do we space that out over a period of time so that it lines up with our general fund? And what, if we were looking at a tax increase, how big would it have to be to fund something different? My one recommendation to you, even if you walk out of this room and you decide, this is all bad news, we don't want to do anything new, we just need to balance our budget. I don't know that that's where you are, and I'm not recommending that that's where you end up. But even if you do that, my recommendation would be that you consider the increase in the debt service fund. Because again, it's designed to do one thing, and it's not doing it. And it's not like you're saving money. You're just pulling $1 million out of operations to pay for it. You're not saving your taxpayers any money by not bringing those things into alignment. So that I would recommend you do, even if, again, you walk out of here and you say, forget about capital planning, we need to focus on this first. The tax level question, and again, the model will take you through the calculation, how big a tax increase. It could go up and down over time as your debt does, so you might increase it by this much this year and then be able to bring it down a certain amount and then kind of level it off. Some of that depends on, we mentioned the fact that if you're going to do next level projects, you probably have to borrow money. Some of that depends on stuff that Lou will be able to tell you. What type of debt, what interest rate, how much, how soon. That's something we can help you evaluate once you're farther on, but we don't want to presume to do that now. Things that could help you out, real estate tax, real estate development, anything that adds jobs is obviously good. Anything that does the opposite is bad. And again, the model will give you the chance to sort of play with those assumptions and say, well, what could I do if this happens, or what could I do if that happens? I've been talking for close to an hour straight. So let me pause there and see if there are any questions, and if not, we'll pull up the model and just give you a short demonstration of how things
Did any of your revenue projections incorporate the payment in lieu of taxes revenue streams?
Yes. So let's skip back a couple of pages. There you go. So your payment, your pilot payments, you've got two. Actually, if we can go all the way back to the beginning, they're actually listed in that growth chart. You've got two main ones, the Giant Center and the Health Center? Yes. So we've talked with Jim. There. So there's your pile of payments. What we're assuming is this one's kind of a fixed number. I think it's kind of capped out. This one has the potential for some growth. But, again, remember, this is
Which ones are capped out and which one isn't?
The giant center, I think, has the... I'll let Jim...
The giant center is capped based on the amount of taxes that you pay. The HFC pile is dependent upon the growth of the square footage of the tax construction.
Correct. Okay. Please continue.
Yeah, so our assumptions here is if you did nothing else, if the cap wasn't changed for the Giant Center, you're sort of at as high as where you can go. And then for the health insurance, for HMC, for the medical center, we're sort of assuming that grows just like the rest of the real estate tax base.
What measures is the township taking to ensure that the pilot payments from the Med Center are accurate in terms of proper assessment of applicable square footage? Given the recent expansion of Hershey Medical Center,
I have to defer to the city manager.
I'm sorry, did you ask me about the importance of the pilot?
Well, I was just asking, what mechanisms do we have in place to ensure that we are in fact receiving pilot payments in accordance with the square footage as agreed upon?
We review it and check the square footage and see if increase is comparable to what the increase of that from the last year. There is no
void.
That's what
he asked. I'm just curious as to how we confirm the accuracy of the square footage. Are we dependent on Hershey Medical Center to report that?
Other questions, or do folks just want to see the model, or are folks sort of absorbing everything that was said here? And the one thing I would say is this is a lot of information. We can come back and talk about this in, you know, after you've had time to think about it, whatever makes sense. This is not designed to be dump it and run. I did want to, again, there's not anything in particular you want to discuss here. Show you the model so that, you know, we can end on a little higher note here and give you a sense of how the tool works. But again, if there are other things that folks want to talk about, with growth rates or other assumptions, I'm happy to provide whatever insight I can. All right, hearing none, let's take a look at the model. So the first thing you'll notice about the model is it's not proprietary software. We're not Microsoft. As the eyes of my two-year-old daughter peek out over the top of the window. Okay, so let's look at a couple of things here. This is the model. It is your model. It's built explicitly for you, and we will train your folks on how to use it. Baseline data. This is that revenue, that projection that you saw, just in a little more detail. It gets really nitty gritty if you wanted to look at, well, I don't want to just know what charges for service, but specific charges for service. What are they, and are they projected to change? You could do that. You could keep it as high level as you want. Literally, you could go line by line here if you really want to. If you doubt, you really will. But this is kind of what's pumping out what your budget would look like in a baseline scenario. Your growth rate assumptions is your ability to do the what-if analysis. So let's say instead of getting the HMC pilot, that one's maybe not big enough to see in that. Let's say instead of the earned income tax, instead of it growing by 2.5% per year, let's change it in 18, 19, and 20 to grow up by 5% per year. So what that would allow you to do is, let's shift to the revenues before you hit F9. See the magic of the... In the general. Okay, and if we press F9, does it work? Yay! It's always nice when it works. So all the numbers updated. So now instead of getting whatever you were getting, now it shows you getting a higher amount. So it rolls through all your revenues. So you can play with the assumptions and say, so how is this useful? Maybe one of the assumptions you want to model is, what does a recession look like? Because a recession is going to happen in the next 10 years. I can't tell you how severe or when, but we're not going to go, we've already gone almost the longest distance we've been from the last recession to today. We're not going to go another decade without one. So if you really wanted to bum yourself out, you can play with the assumptions and say, okay, what does that look like if in a different kind of revenue growth pattern where real estate tax kind of levels out and maybe EIT, the income tax, either flatlines or drops a little bit. You could also do it in a growth perspective. So one of the things that your township staff are very thoughtful about is what's happening out there in the economy, in the community, and how does it affect us? So you could say, okay, this thing is happening over here, so we want to assume it adds 50 new jobs. That changes our LST growth rate to X. And our income tax growth rate to X, and then model that through and show what that does. So this is the different levers to try and get to impact the general fund budget. The extra part that we've built here for the township is the capital planning module. So let's zoom out a little bit. Ooh, okay, this is going to be thankfully it'll be easier to read when you're looking at the computer as opposed to like this. But what you have at the top is there's our revenue streams that fund capital projects, the general fund transfer, the real estate tax, the millage is the 4502. That's the thing that's kind of not carrying its own weight, the cycling fund transfer, and then everything else, which is kind of inconsequential. You also have the reserves, so your reserves in the capital fund, remember that 1.7, 1.6 number, there it is there, the 1.6. So the money I bring in next year plus the money I have at the end of this year would be available for capital projects. Look at the expenses, that's my debt service. Baseline projects, these are the vehicles and the facilities, the things I need to do on a day-to-day basis. See what you spend, and it comes out the other side. If what you tried to do was just balance the capital budget, is just said, I don't want to draw from my reserves, or I don't want to draw from the general fund at as high a level as I have been. That bottom line there where it says 0.3100, that's telling you what the millage rate would need to be to do that. That's 0.3010 on top of 0.4502. So it's in addition to that. The base tax, which you already have, that's the $920,000 growing at a modest rate up at the top. This is designed to say, well, if I want to do something else, well, and the only way I was going to get at it was a tax increase, which in your general fund is not true. That's not the only way to balance your issues. But here in the capital fund, where you really only have three sources of revenue, this is the level of tax increase you would need to do that. But let's talk about some better news. Let's scroll out a little bit. So what this enables you to do is say, okay, and I realize our font is getting tinier and tinier here, and this isn't designed to be an eye test. So what you have the ability to do here is add capital projects and play with how much does it cost, how long do I pay it off, and when do I start? So one of the things you're going to want to do is you're going to want to buy police cars, and we've got an assumption of $1.6 million in there. What's that? Over 10 years, starting next year. So those are generic assumptions. So if we turn that on, and we press the go button, it blows up and does nothing. No, there it is. It adds that spending to the model in two places. One, now you can see it spread across your budget, but more importantly, now you can see that the amount of money you need to pay for it goes up, because I'm spending more money, it's going out. Now, let's turn on two other things. Let's turn on, scroll down a little bit. Let's turn on the roadway improvements. And I'm totally making this up. And the public works equipment. So this is not your capital plan. I'm just trying to give you a sense of how the model works. Press the F9. And you can see those sorts of things. That's a small one that only hits in 1 year. What you can do, okay, let's go to the left here a little bit. Let's say instead of 4.6, I'm going to make it 2.6, and instead of 10 years, I'm going to pay it off over 5.
Test of Daniel's Excel.
So now it just shifted it. So it shows the flow of money out of the model, however you want it to work. Number of years, when it starts, how much it is. The last part of it, and again, if you're going to do significant capital, let's turn everything off except the recreation center. So this is a big one. I talked about something significant here. I think we still have the police vehicles on. Let's turn those off. So this is a big one here. It really is $25 million over 10 years. You can do the math in your head, and it's... you're missing the years there. $2.5 million a year. So obviously that's not something you've got lying around. What you would have to do to pay for that, and incidentally a $25 million project would be, I think it would be the largest over the last 10 years. If not, it would be pretty close to it. What you would have to do here is figure out, okay, obviously we don't have $25 million a year, and I don't have $2.5 million a year on an ongoing basis either. So what you would end up doing here is you would end up borrowing money, which is absolutely fine. Again, remember we talked about the fact that that's an acceptable and a proper way to fund your projects, but what you would do is you would work with Lou, you would figure out what numbers go in here based on what's your credit rating, what type of debt am I issuing, what's my interest rate, all that sort of stuff. When do I want to pay it off? You generally try and keep a level debt service so that you don't have something that looks like this. Actually, by state law, you have to do that. But you would go in here and you would plug in numbers, and we won't do it now, but you would plug in the precise numbers that Lou would give you. And again, it would crank through and show you, okay, this is the amount of money I need to pay that off. So this is designed to help you think through. And while we don't have anything on the debt side because it's completely blank, but while we have 6 on the specific project side, you have lots and lots of space to put in whatever you want here, and then to turn them on in different combinations. So again, the model is designed to help you in two ways. General fund, what are my options to get myself balanced or to put myself in a different position? What happens if, and how do I prepare for it? And then the capital fund prospect, what are the things I want to think about doing and how do I want to think about sequencing them over time?
Gordon, in terms of expenditures,
yes.
Trying to reduce uncertainty.
Yes.
The Are you able to advise us on whether or not our current self-insurance of health care coverage is the optimal way to go on this based on your experience with other municipalities?
It's something where we would be, could potentially be helpful, but I don't want to outkick my coverage. Your third-party administrator is probably a better source
of that.
Where we can be useful is in terms of thinking about different elements of the plan itself, co-pays, deductibles, that sort of thing. But in terms of making the risk decision, is it a good gamble or not, your third-party administrator is going to be a better
source. Than I am. Okay, great. Thank you.
Mark, I would think also we could check with PSATs and see what other municipalities are doing and all the increases in health care.
Right.
Yep. We could compare similar-sized municipalities.
Right, and it's very volatile given the Affordable Health Care Act stuff.
We've been through this exercise, I think, fairly recently, didn't we, in terms of that? Right, exactly. So I'm just trying to look maybe 5 to 10 years down the road. I guess the landscape changes so much between now and then that'd be the next one possible.
Well, what you could do, you sit down with them and say, if we go fully insured and we do this with our plan change, how does that? Let's say economist buzzword here. How does it bend the cost curve down? So how does it take it from 10% down to 8% over a period of time? That's worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. Not right away, because the curve doesn't go from here to here, but just by mitigating the growth, you save yourself a significant amount of money.
Any questions, the court, this is exactly what I think we were looking for. I can't speak for everybody, it's what I was hoping for. You're an excellent presenter, so you did a great job when you did the proposal for us and also today. And this is going to be such an effective tool to help us steer the ship. So
we're very, very thankful for the opportunity to work with you guys. Thank you for the endorsement and hopefully we'll be able to talk to more professionals.
Thank you.
Outstanding. Thank you.
Thank you.
At this time, I'd like to invite the any questions or comments from the general public? Anybody would like to come forward, identify themselves and their address. All right. If there's nothing else for consideration, I'd like to echo the sentiments of Justin. I think this was an extremely valuable endeavor. And appreciate the thoroughness with which you dispatch your duties, and greatly appreciate that. I will move to adjourn this meeting. Any opposition to that? And this meeting is hereby adjourned. Thank you.